Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. It is Sunday, April 1st, April Fool's Day. I have a good show on the way for you today. I was able to catch up with both Jeff Goodman and Jeff Borzello from ESPN.com. We were at the Alamo Dome earlier today, and we talked all about the coaching changes that have happened in the last couple of weeks, as well as the Final Four, which is why we are down here in San Antonio. We had a nice little recap of the games on Saturday night, and we talked a little bit about this game coming up on Monday. I think it's a good show. I do think you're going to enjoy the conversation. It got a little bit weird sometimes, but the best podcasts do that. Before I get into it, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to the podcast. Anything that you could do to interact with this podcast in whatever app that it is that you listen to podcasts in, whether it's Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever, it really does help us. It helps the metrics. It helps us get found. This is the best time of year and the biggest time of year and the most important time of year for college basketball podcasts to be found. So anything you could do, whether it's just throwing us a rating, throwing us a five-star review, saying nice things about me, all that stuff, it does help. I really do appreciate it. And let's get into that conversation with the two Jeffries. And now let me welcome on straight from, where are we right now? One of the breakout rooms, one of the media session breakout rooms.
San Antonio.
I have
San Antonio. Closet. We're in San Antonio, Rob.
I have ESPN's, I'm going to just call you guys the two Jeffries. How's that work? That's Jeff fine. Goodman.
Do you know how to spell Jeffrey yet?
G-E-O-F-F-E-R-Y.
E-R-Y?
E-R-Y.
He always spells it E-R-Y.
First of all, neither one of us spelled with a G.
And no one's ever spelled it E-R-Y, I don't think. Right. Maybe Jeffrey Taylor at Vanderbilt circa 19-whatever.
Jeffrey Taylor?
Yeah, that was the guy, right?
He went with a G?
No, E-R-Y.
E-R-Y. E-R-Y. That's true.
No one else does, I don't think.
Nobody.
You guys both are kind of G-E-O's to me. G-E-O Jeffs.
That's a German, I think. I think it's German.
I think it's American.
That's German.
Anyway, it's Jeff Borzello and Jeff Goodman, both of ESPN.com. We are live in the Alamo Dome in San Antonio. It is Sunday. What is today? Sunday, April 1st?
April
1st.
April Fool's Day. April Easter. 1st.
How have we not done an April Fool's Day joke to Borzello? Let's get Norlander. Forget this. We're going to get Norlander. Once we're done with this, we're going to come up with a plan.
This is great podcasting right now. Should we come up with an April Fool's Day form?
Let's bail on this podcast and go do Norlanders right now.
Yeah, forget it. We're out of here, Dustin.
He won't have you on the pod.
Sure. They don't do guests.
Yeah.
Now, when we did the pod, that's when it crushed it. Ever since I did it. Then Borzello came in, but he wasn't able to talk.
I talked for 2 minutes every 30 minutes.
Seriously.
Well, we're going to – hopefully we won't have you be talking too much on this podcast.
I'm eating cookies.
I actually only wanted Goodman here.
I brought him in.
Yeah, you just brought him in.
I brought him in.
Did you feel uncomfortable along with me in a room?
A lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Well, yes, I felt uncomfortable with you alone in the room. Absolutely. At least I've got evidence now.
I thought this cookie would be soft.
Oster tries to hit on me or something.
No. I mean, we have – it's a live mic, so if anyone hears it, it's right there.
Oh, that's a good point.
He's going to get saved. Yeah, they'll know.
Can't you delete? In a podcast, you could.
He's got to add out all my ums.
Right, you could add out all my ums. That'd be awesome.
All right, so we have a lot to talk about Final Fours and everything. Before we do that, though, I need to talk to you about at some point, I probably have to address the fact that Chris Mack took the Louisville job and Jeff Capel took the Pitt job. So let's start with this. Borzello.
Yes.
Which one of those was the better hire?
I think Chris Mack was. I mean, he's been to tournaments in, I think, 8 of the last 9 years. Midwest, he's got his wife has family here. It was a no-brainer. I mean, that was the most obvious hire that Louisville could have made.
There it is.
That's like three in my two sentences. I do think Pittsburgh made a really good hire, though, after a search that's a sort of, are you going to track how many alums? Is that what you're taking in your notebook?
How many pieces of paper am I going to need for this?
I think Pittsburgh's search was kind of poor, given how they got publicly declined a couple of times. But I do think they ended up with a good hire. But comparing the two, Chris Mack's just proven more as a head coach and is a better hire when you compare the two. But I do think that Pittsburgh, despite their search, ended up with a very good hire.
What does Capel have to do to actually succeed there? Like, how do you win at Pitt?
So you have to find a way to get players. The Duke name carries a little more cachet than Pittsburgh basketball does right now, but he proved he can get players at VCU, players at Oklahoma. I think that's the biggest thing. He's going to have to keep some of their roster together just because they only have three guys if those transfers end up leaving. So I think that's the first thing. And then he's going to have to upgrade the talent. They don't have high major talent 1 through 13 right now. They have it maybe 1 through 5, 1 through 6. So that's the first thing. He's going to have to upgrade the talent. And then, you know, I don't think they're ever going to be a consistent top five ACC program in the next 5-10 years, just because of who else is in the league. But if they can consistently get in the top half, I think that would be considered a success.
I mean, that's the argument that you made when Hurley took the UConn job over the Pitt job, is that it's better to be a top three job in your conference than it is to be, you know, a top whatever.
A lot of people like the Pittsburgh job, though.
Well, I don't understand that. Explain that.
So they liked it. I don't think they like it as much anymore because it's in the ACC. Back when it was in the Big East, you could recruit the prep schools. You could recruit New York a lot easier. Now, I just
– it's a harder sell.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit well.
When we're in the Big East, you could say, hey, you're going to be able to see your kid play, you know, 8 games a year, 9 games a year. Now it's like, oh, you could see them when they go to BC. You know, they see them at where else? Syracuse?
Here's the thing with Capel. Right. Two things for me that stood out. Number one was Heather Lyke, with her compliance heavy background, hired Jeff Capel, who had been cleansed at Duke. Period. He had been cleansed. Listen, he got run out of Oklahoma for NCAA issues, whether it was him, not him. It was Aronde Telfero, his assistant, whatever the case, he was cleansed at Duke. That's the first thing. The second thing is we're going to see if Jeff Capel can recruit. Not having that Coach K and
but
and
he Duke recruited name. Pretty well at Oklahoma and VCU.
Okay, he did. I'll give you part of it. He got Blake Griffin to stay, you know, local. Like, I don't know. The three of us might have been able to do that. Willie Warren, Tiny Gallen, Tommy Mason Griffin. They were all top 25-ish players. How did those three work out?
Yeah, but you could flip it and say he got Eric Maynard at VCU.
He did. He did a good job with
so
that.
So I'm saying, like, he –
I'm just not sold.
I don't think it's a knock on him that he got top 25 players. Even they didn't pan out, sure. But to get those kids, you're beating out other.
Nobody wanted Willie Warren at the end of it.
Okay,
nobody
but I'm saying getting 5-star kids in itself is good recruiting, whether they panned out or not.
But isn't that part of the deal?
That's not part of recruiting. I don't think
there are getting the right ones instead of just taking guys that have maybe issues. Or
I think that a good recruiting
being able to coach them.
For a 5-star kid is beating out other high major programs for a kid. I think that's
okay.
Part of it.
I'll give
you
that.
I agree with you. Maybe
did Capel learn? Okay, I guess maybe the better question is: did Capel learn from his first time around at Oklahoma, and now? And again, Oklahoma is still an easier place to recruit than Pittsburgh. Way easier.
Yes.
Right. I mean, kids from Oklahoma want to go. Well, to Oklahoma.
Also, I mean, that there's you recruit Dallas, you can recruit the Midwest, you can recruit a lot in
there's
Pittsburgh.
A lot
it's
that's right.
You're really there's not going to Philly to get kids. You're probably not going to beat a lot of Philly schools for Philly kids. You're not going to. Right. You have to recruit Ohio, so you're fighting Big Ten teams for Ohio kids. So it's a lot harder to recruit to Pittsburgh just because the areas around there is
not as much. Yeah. I mean, I like the Capel hire. I do. I actually like it. It's just going to be interesting to see whether he can make them relevant in any shape, way, or form at the end of the day.
I mean, it was at the end of the day, it was the best of the options that they had available. Yeah. Right?
He wanted an ACC job, mm-hmm. Capel, desperately, couldn't get one. So that's the reason why he took Pittsburgh is because what's next? What else is he going to be able to get? I mean,
I thought Georgia would be a great fit for him if comparing what was available this spring.
He probably couldn't get involved in Georgia, you know, and he couldn't get involved in Georgia Tech a few years ago. Couldn't get it. So I think it was him just saying, because I think a lot of people felt like, well, you know, he's going to be the next coach at Duke. You know, let's hold up here a little bit. I still feel like it's – if Wojo can get hot again, my bet is on Wojo.
Chris Collins?
I think Chris Collins, the thing is for Collins, with his dad being an NBA guy, I think Chris Collins would sit at Northwestern. Now, can you turn down Duke? No. But I think Chris Collins will get hot again, and I think we'll see him in the NBA rather than Duke.
Makes more sense for him to be in Chicago and build up Northwestern the program that Duke was. Like at least my read of it at this time was what he wanted to do with Northwestern was turn it into what Duke is in North Carolina. Because when Coach K got that job, Duke wasn't then what it is now.
That's right.
And I think at least what I thought was that was how he wanted to build it up. So. Yeah. Last thing, without Capel there, is Duke still going to be able to recruit? Are they still going to be able to get guys?
That's Duke. I mean, the Duke sells itself. Coach K sells himself, I guess.
As long as K's there.
As long as K's there.
They're going to get players. They're going to get players. Will they get 1, 2, and 3 again without Capel? My gut says no way.
But he didn't get all three of those guys.
No, he only got one of them.
Right.
He only got one. And, I mean, you look at it and, You know, but John Shire got reddish.
They got lightning in a bottle with getting the top three guys.
No doubt. Nate James has gotten players. John Shire's gotten players. I don't know how good Chris Carriwell is. I mean, they're going to take a hit. Going from Capel to Carriwell is going to be a hit. I would expect Duke's recruiting classes to look a little bit different in the next couple of years, and not necessarily going after the elite players, but looking at how they fit in the program a little bit more.
I think that's the question. Is Kay going to go away from this at all in terms of going out? I wanted to get the top five guys, whether they're one and done or not, given that, I mean, he won a title with it, but past 2 years, preseason number one, didn't win a title either year, sort of, you know, had some drama during the year, didn't make the Final Four. Does he go away from this at all?
Let's face it. Trevon Duvall was not a kid you ever thought would play at Duke. Marquise Bolden, probably the same thing at the end of the day. So they've gotten away from their typical, I hate to say it, but it's true, like, quote unquote, Duke kids.
Slapping the floor, that whole deal.
Is that what you're talking about? They did slap the floor in the zone. He went to the zone too.
So he's adapting.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking more about like Duvall being at three different schools. Okay.
Squeaky clean transcript, that type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, again, so listen, there were some kids back in the day that got into Duke without a great transcript. Okay. So it's not like they're, you know, these are the first ones. But Duvall told me before the season, he even said it. He's like, yeah, I never thought of myself as a Duke kid. But they
badly needed a point guard in 17.
Yeah.
I remember talking about it with you back in, I guess, probably the summer before Duvall's senior year. It's like, why aren't Duke and Kentucky and all these schools on him?
Yeah.
And then come his senior year, Duke needs a point guard. You know, Quade Green went elsewhere, Matt Coleman, whatever. And they're like, oh, Trevon Duvall's still out there. Yep. Let's go get Trevon Duvall.
They're going to be fun to watch next year. I think their chemistry will be a lot better watching these kids at the McDonald's game. They like each other more. You threw Bagley into the mix late, and Wendell Carter can say what he wants, but you know he wasn't happy when Bagley came on board, because then he's taking that second fiddle, and certainly you've got two bigs that are jamming up the post.
But Carter's always wanted to be a four, so it enabled him to play the four. I get what you're saying. But it also meant he didn't have to play a pure five. He didn't have to guard.
He was in the middle of the zone. Huh? I mean, he was playing the five defensively. He was in the middle of the zone. Bagley was, I don't know, spinning his wheels on the.
No, he was on the wing. He was jumping up and down on the wing. He was doing things.
Yeah, he wasn't really.
I mean, the only reason they were in that zone was because they couldn't guard anybody.
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 Boston was a nightmare for
them. Yeah, it was an absolute nightmare. I don't understand this idea.
How about this, Duvall? If you're Duvall, what do you do? Somebody asked me this the other day at one of those bars that we didn't go to the other night. But somebody close to Duvall asked me, they're like, you know, what should he do? And I'm like, what do you mean? What choice is there right now? Because if he stays, Trey Jones is going to have the ball in his hands. He's the point guard next year. So Duvall is better off the ball, but they got to play Reddish. They got to play Barrett. Zion's going to play.
Play Zion at the five, baby.
Well, honestly, that probably
that
is his
be best lineup. That's
I mean, imagine
lineup.
Zion at the five. Nobody would be able to guard him.
Reddish point forward at the four.
Could they rebound?
Barrett at the three.
And they'll rebound well enough because they're so long at the – they'd be so long at the three.
I mean, Villanova basically does that right now. What's all that different between
– Spellman's got how many inches on Zion?
Villanova's got five guys that can shoot 40% from three. It's a little bit different.
But they still – defensively, that's what – basically what the right. – where basketball is going. You put five guys on the floor that are all switchable, that are all the same
Zion's
size.
Like 6'4" and a half. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, but he's really athletic.
It would be a crazy, crazy, crazy small line. It would be – I mean, with him at the five, but like – Barrett's 6'7". I mean, Reddish is 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah, no.
It's not like you're going with 6'4 across the board.
And it doesn't have to be the only lineup you use because you could – I mean, Delorier's still there, and he's one of those guys that could be – he's athletic enough.
To me, he's a perfect five for them this year for the team they have.
But I think they're going to have Zion at the five for long stretches, or they should at least.
It should be part of their rotation. It should be one of the lineups that they use, and sometimes it's going to work against different teams, and sometimes it's not going to work. But that should definitely be something that they use.
Anybody in their starting five come back?
I don't think so. I'd be surprised.
Most likely would be who? Gary Trent?
No, most likely would be Duvall, probably. I think Trent's gone.
Where is he going to play next year?
Who?
Trent.
But the two.
Is he going to play over Reddish and over
Barrett? If you do the Zion at the five line, he'd be the perfect two.
Right. Yeah, but let's say they don't. Let's say that they use a lineup with somebody else at the five and Zion at the four.
Delorier at the five, Zion at the four. Right, Reddish, Barrett, Trey Jones. It's pretty good. It's a pretty good lineup.
Where would you rank them in the preseason next year with that lineup?
Probably one. Probably one.
He's, you would rank he's him not one? Ranking him outside. He's outside the top 10.
No, I have him.
Are you kidding?
I have him five right now.
You had you said last year you had him 11.
And you have one.
I said I was going to make them 11 out of principle, and then I went through and I looked at it, and I was there's not enough good teams. I have Villanova
State,
number one.
You have Wichita State one?
Villanova with who back, though?
Everyone except Bridges.
You think Brunson's coming back?
Jalen's not coming back.
You think he's gone?
Yeah. You don't?
He's come back to win with a third title?
No, he's gone. I'd be shocked if he comes back. I mean, shocked. So you might want to move them down.
Maybe I will move them down. What about Virginia? Or would you have them?
Behind Duke. I think Duke at the end of the year would be really good.
I just want to see it with these freshmen next year.
I just think the chemistry is going to be so much better. So
much
better.
It might be, but it's all freshmen again.
Yeah, I know, but they have a point guard this
and so,
year.
But, and so let me ask you this. Why, if we've been saying all along that this class doesn't have the same amount of talent,
but the top few are
good. But we see how much these groups come in that are just freshmen and don't have that veteran presence.
It makes you worry.
Why are we immediately going to trust that fact and this group to put it together when Duke hasn't really done it that well for the last couple of years, and this group doesn't have that same level of talent? Like, we're this 1, 2, and 3. Let me ask you this:
because but at the same time, we're saying the 17 class outside the top few guys wasn't great. Those guys are never gone. So it's not to me. It's not like the 18 class, the top guys are significantly worse than who's in college basketball.
And I got to tell you, they're also sophomores versus freshmen. And what do coaches always say? The best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores.
They do always say that.
They do always say that.
I mean, there's no DeAndre Ayton in this class.
Right.
There's no Marvin Bagley.
There's no Michael Porter.
But
I mean, I'll tell you
what. So there's none of the freshmen.
RJ Barrett, like, he impresses me.
He's good.
He just – he comes to play. Like, his work ethic is really good. Yeah, like, he's a pro. Like, he's a pro already in terms of how he prepares, how he plays.
Yep.
Reddish still has some growth to me as far as his maturity a little bit and bringing it every game. But RJ Barrett's like that dude that – has been taught to be a pro from a young age. So he's going to be.
And he's won a lot.
He's terrific.
Let me ask you this. Would you put him on the same level as somebody like a Michael Porter Jr. or a DeAndre Ayton in terms of.
Better in terms of college production.
You think so? More college production than DeAndre Ayton?
No, you jumped him in at the end. But then Michael Porter would
have been. But more efficiency.
He didn't produce that much.
Well, he didn't play. But
let's say, but you know what I mean. Like would you put him on the same level as like an Ayton or a Bagley or somebody of that level?
He's not rebound like that.
Right.
I mean, those guys average 20.
But numbers, will he have that same kind of impact? Is he going to be that kind of a dude?
The hard part is, again, it's going to be how Duke runs their offense with all these guys, right? I mean, how are you keeping them all happy? Who's your guy? Who's your guy that's going to make a play? Like, Trey Jones isn't a great shooter.
I think Reddish.
He can make a play. He can definitely – RJ can make a play.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They can. Like, you're asking.
And that's the kind of cool thing, I guess, is that they've got multiple guys who can do it. And I don't think – I think the hard part of Duke has been over the years. And same thing with Kentucky is all these guys – and this is what separates Villanova is – Villanova's guys are not consumed, are not worried about the NBA. They're not. You watch them play and you can see it. All they do is move the ball. Uncontested shot after uncontested shot.
And Jay Wright talks about that. He says, he's like, we don't want kids that don't want to play in the NBA. That's not what we're recruiting. But we want guys that don't look at us as just a stop on the way to the NBA. Because if you come here to Villanova and you're just saying, hey, I'm going to be here for a year, you're not going to buy into what we do. And if you don't have total buy-in with what Villanova does – you're not winning 35 whatever games they're going to win this year. It's just every kid has to buy into what they're doing. And, you know, I was talking to Jermaine Samuels, and he said, he's like, when I got here, I was like, I've never played like this before. I'm not playing that much. You know, this is not what I thought it was going to be. And it's like any other program, that kid's out.
Yeah.
He's transferring at the end of the first semester. If not, he's sitting on the bench. He's leaving first year. And he's like, now I'm totally bought in.
Well, and here, if he leaves, people crush him. Because it's almost like the Villanova way. Yeah. What's wrong with him?
And all these kids, they're like, well, you know, Mikal Bridges redshirted, Dante DiVincenzo redshirted, Phil Booth and Pascal and Amar, they all redshirted. And at Villanova, no one has an issue with it. Yeah. It's like, hey, you know, someone else didn't. Mikal Bridges is a lottery pick now.
Right.
It's worked. Like, it's like, you know, he didn't play as a freshman.
And I think they see that the track record that Jay has with getting these guys that maybe aren't on that level and turning them into players that actually have careers in the NBA. Like when Josh Hart was coming out of high school,
he was top 100.
Yeah, but nobody thought.
He was top 100. Nobody thought he was going to be in the NBA. Oh, and he comes there for 4 years. He ends up being a first-round pick. How many people thought Ryan Archidiakono was going to play in the NBA?
Just talk to him, and he's
on a two-way with the Bulls. Yeah.
He's playing.
He's playing. No, you're right. You're right. And again, it's like anything. If you have proof to be able to show them, and you have Jalen Brunson who learned from Ryan Arcidiacono and passes it down, it's a whole lot easier to buy.
That's what, you're not like fighting. Like Samuels, Gillespie, they're all like, we've seen guys before us do this. And you know, they never, maybe they complained at the time that they weren't playing as much. Right. It changes when you see everyone else winning. You see someone else doing it, and it's like, all right, that could be me in 2 years. And here, they're willing to wait their turn. The staff talks about it. It starts in the recruiting process. They're not promising, hey, you're going to play 25 minutes a game as a freshman. It's like, hey, you might have to redshirt. And kids that come here, commit here, they're like, hey, you know, they told me I'm going to have to redshirt. This isn't a shock to me or my family. So you don't have that drama. You don't have that. Is he going to transfer? Is he going to stay? It's just the continuity of the program is astounding.
So let's talk about this Villanova team and what they did last night. They set a record for the most threes ever made in a Final Four game in the first 21 minutes of that game. Have you, Jeff, how long have you been doing this? You're the elder statesman here.
Can you, 15 years,
man. Can you ever remember seeing a performance like that by a team against somebody as good as this Kansas team, this Kansas program is? Because I cannot.
I mean, 2 years ago, they beat Oklahoma by 44. It was an embarrassment. Like, that one was Buddy Hield, the National Player of the Year. So yeah, similar.
But remember, that game was 9 points in the second half.
Yeah.
Then
they went on a crazy
run. Villanova broke their spirit.
About how, like, last night's game was, you know, great performance. Like, it's not that unusual for Villanova to do that. They do it to Xavier twice a year. They do it in the Big East.
I don't consider anything that Villanova does to Xavier, because that's a lot for a 30-point loss.
Saying, it's like yesterday wasn't even like their best shooting performance of the tournament. They made 17 against Alabama. They shot 50% against West Virginia.
But if
like,
we had
they do
said
it every
this,
game. It's insane.
If we had said this, though, against Kansas a month ago, right, you wouldn't have been that surprised.
I wasn't surprised last night.
Right. It's Kansas coming over the win against Duke that everybody kind of built Kansas up. And I picked them to win it all. And I think I told you guys, I have no idea why I did. I did because they had a lot of good guards.
You had total buy-in, Jeff.
They had a lot of good guards.
Jayhawk way.
But that Kansas team not – how many first-round picks on the Kansas team?
Maybe Devontae.
Maybe.
First-round pick?
Maybe.
All right. Probably not. Probably.
He's a good point guard. He's a good shooter.
Yeah, he'll probably go in the 30s or 40s. Yeah. But at the end of the day, none. Like – let's be honest. What Bill Self did with that group, getting them that far.
It's one of the best jobs he's ever done as a coach.
That team is not – it was not very good. It wasn't by their standards. And it was a horrendous matchup for them against Villanova, mostly because of Doak.
Because you could look at the other one and say, oh, Kansas plays the four guards. They could be able to match up. And it's like, well –
But you had a big that can't
go out.
Then
they have Doak against Amari Spellman, who's like, I'll shoot 45%.
Well, I'll shoot or I'll beat him off the dribble and then – the rotations were
terrible.
To me,
Spellman's been like the thing that's taken this. This is to me, that's why this Villanova team is better than the last five versions of it. It's because of him. I mean, he's grown as a defender and all that, but he shoots 45% from three. They could put five guys on the perimeter, and you know, Michigan can't.
But it's not just that he can shoot threes. Like, there's plenty of big men that can shoot threes. It's the fact that he can.
He's also lost 55 pounds.
He can, and he attacks closeouts. He's athletic. He'll put the ball on the floor and go by you and dunk on you. It's when you can put all that together, and really he can pass too. That's the thing. Like Villanova, the best part about watching
him this year.
You think so?
He may be their best NBA player from this team.
Could be. I mean, look at the bigs that are going to be drafted in the first.
I just think that Bridges. If you look at what Bridges can do between the way that he can defend and the way that he can make threes, Bridges is going to be one of those guys where we look up in 10 years and he's still starting somewhere.
It's like a Trevor Ariza,
Corey Brewer, someone like that. He's probably a better shooter than Corey Brewer.
Andre Iguodala. I'm just throwing names out there. But yes, I mean, look at the big guys that'll be drafted in like 25 to 35, 40 in this draft. You're saying Amari Spellman's not better than Brandon McCoy? Somebody like that?
That's a good point. I would take him over Brandon McCoy. I'm not convinced that he has the mobility to be able to defend at the next level that he needs to be able to. But how tall is he? What is he, like 6'9"?
Here's one for you. Who would you rather have going forward in the NBA? Kelly Olynyk or Amari Spellman?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Kelly Olynyk's making, you know, $15 million or $12 million a year, playing a good amount of minutes. I'll take Amari down the road.
What's what I'm saying? But, like, you mentioned his you know, lateral agility, mobility, whatever. Guard. There's a lot of big guys, pick-and-pop big guys that can't guard anybody. And they're making a lot of money in the NBA.
Yep.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. The shooting changes it, man. Mm-hmm. Shooting changes everything.
Yeah. Well, and the way to be able to do that.
Yeah. Michigan Loyola. Are you happy to see Loyola gone? Were you done with Sister Jean? I was done with Sister Jean. I'll say it.
I was done with her. I wasn't done with her. And I like her, but like I'm like, all right, enough.
I didn't write a single story on her the entire tournament.
Nope.
I didn't even show up for the press conference the other day.
Well, you don't grind as hard as you used to.
I really don't.
But no, I mean, I'd rather see Villanova Michigan in the title game, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. I think Villanova will beat Michigan by 13 tomorrow, and I probably think they would have done the same to Loyola.
Yeah, I don't think it matters who Villanova plays.
They're awesome. Mm-hmm. And that's why I picked them to win it months ago, and that's why you jumped on the Kansas bandwagon. Yikes. And you were on the Duke bandwagon. It was really dumb.
I think that Duke would have given them a fight.
I think Villanova would have torched the zone. Think about the way Notre Dame and Carolina, all these teams picked apart the zone. Villanova's a better passing team than all of them, better shooting team than all of them.
They probably would have, but I think that Duke would have had a better chance against them than Kansas did.
Imagine Bagley trying to guard in that zone.
Well, no, because all you got to do is you don't have to guard anybody.
Is Dawson about to tell us how to beat Villanova?
No. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you how to beat Villanova. You hope they miss, right? I think that's really all it is.
Yeah,
you got to hope that it's one of those nights they miss.
The zone had a lot of holes.
But like Texas Tech,
Texas Tech, and
Villanova beat Texas Tech by 12. Like,
listen, Kansas.
How bad did Keenan Evans look in that game? You were there, right? You were with me in Boston.
Wasn't he still hurt?
He's a broken toe.
Broken toe.
Oh, he did. He had a broken toe.
Three breaks or something. Really? Maybe a ligament deal, something like that.
It was bad.
Did you get the X-rays?
I didn't get them.
Really? You need to get them.
But yeah, it's definitely broken. And he waited.
When are you going back to Lubbock?
I loved Lubbock, man. I might buy a house there. I might become a West Texas guy.
You know how much it'll cost? I heard you can get a mansion in Lubbock.
It'll probably cost me like three mortgage payments. My current.
Couple grand. It'll be good.
Couple grand.
You can get a mansion in Lubbock.
Pay for it.
Right next to Beard.
I can't.
You can't do it, man. You know what that is? That's a landlocked state.
Can't do landlocked. I need natural bodies of water.
Actually, it's not landlocked because they're on the Gulf of Mexico, but that's east.
If you're like a border, then it's not really landlocked. That's what I'm going with. That's my new thing.
So since it touches Mexico?
It's not landlocked.
It's actually not landlocked. We're idiots because it's on the Gulf of Mexico.
It's got a Gulf, right?
It's got to be.
It does have a Gulf.
But that is farther away. That's probably farther away. How far do you think it would take to get for you to get from Lubbock to the coast in Texas? Lubbock to Houston is basically what you'd have to
do. He would answer. How would he know the answer?
That's a seven-hour drive. That's probably a seven-hour drive.
He stayed within like a 3-mile radius in Lubbock. He went to the bar.
I flew into Lubbock and went back and forth.
Right. Office, of arena, bar, hotel.
Yeah, that's all I did.
Right?
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere else.
Gulf. Sounds like thrilling.
He knows what a Gulf is.
Do you know what the Gulf is?
Gulf of Mexico.
Congratulations, man.
I'm a geography guy. Are you kidding me, bro? That's how I know all about the bodies of water. That's how I know what's landlocked.
Can you explain to people why you hate landlocked places?
I prefer coasts.
I do too. Who doesn't?
Dosser evidently doesn't.
You don't like, really?
No, I like the coast.
Sure.
Look at where I've lived.
All right.
I lived in Connecticut, then I lived in D.C., and then I lived in New Jersey.
All right, so if we put you in, I don't know, South Dakota?
South Dakota.
How long were you last?
I'm in TJ.
In South Dakota? Probably not very long, but if you put me in someplace that was a little better than South Dakota.
I actually think people would look at you.
I listen to country music.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd fit in way better than you.
We found that out the other night. You and country music, you would have stayed there all night.
I would have. That was good.
No, stop.
Actually, he's not that good. I just wanted to hear Wagon Wheel. It was a Darius Rucker concert for everyone.
You never heard Wagon Wheel.
Why didn't I get Wagon Wheel?
Why don't you give us a little rendition now of Wagon Wheel?
I'm not going to sing it.
Come on.
But we would have to
just
wait
a verse.
An hour.
One verse?
I'm not going to sing it.
Entire verse.
We would have had to wait an hour to get there.
Do you think it was the last one?
It was.
Did you check around?
It's the only song that people know.
I knew one other song.
What? No, because it was the Hootie and the Blowfish. You knew the Hootie and the Blowfish song.
Oh, you're talking about just his songs.
Just his songs.
Wagon Wheel.
Yeah.
I miss it already.
Yeah.
That's your guy, too.
It was an open bar, too.
It was an open bar.
All right, we got to talk about the national title game.
This is only taking 20 minutes.
I know. Yeah, my wife and daughter are going to kill me if I'm not back soon.
We got to have a nice Easter meal, Doster.
All right, let's just talk about the national title game. Real quick.
Yep.
Who you got and why?
Villanova 71, Michigan 58. I just think Villanova's too good. Michigan can't score. in a half court against teams that switch screens. Villanova will do that. I think they're going to get bogged down. I think the lead might hit 20 at some point. I mean, I don't think Villanova is going to put up 90 points. Michigan's too good defensively. I don't think it'll be that close.
All right, so if I brought up the list of national champions and the point guards that started for them, where do you think Xavier Simpson would rank if they won it all?
In what, the last 10 years and what?
20. Ever? Let's go last 20 years. Maybe ever.
Well, based on the way that he played in the Final Four against Loyola, I would say like negative
last.
Ninth.
Like last.
Negative ninth.
Listen, the bottom line is you can't win a national title without a high-level point guard these days. And we've got the best, right? Can we agree that Jalen Brunson is the best in the country? Mm-hmm. And we've got a guy that really struggles. And he struggles to score. He doesn't,
He's been good the last month until Saturday.
Yeah.
And he struggled against Sydney.
The bottom line is at his best.
I mean, his
best
is not
as good. He's still nowhere near Jalen. He's still, again, if you put him on the list of point guards who have played for a national title, Xavier Simpson is still towards the bottom. So, in my opinion, I don't want to say there's no way they can win, but there's minimal chance.
Can I play devil's advocate? Because sure. I agree with you guys. So here's what I would say.
What do you got?
What Xavier Simpson does best is his ability to defend. If you look at what he's done since the start of the Big Ten tournament, he's locked up a lot of really good point guards. No one at Jalen Brunson's level, but between like Cassius Winston and Carson Edwards, he even did a good job. He did a really good job on Rob Gray. Ahmad Rory looked like he was Jeff Borzello out there playing. It was it was not pretty. So,
but those guys didn't have what Jalen's got.
No, I know. But what I'm saying, but here's the other thing.
Even if you lock up Jalen.
But here's the other thing. So he's got all those guys around him, but Michigan has the athletes and the defenders that can actually match up with them. If they want to go and match up with them in terms of athleticism.
So Xavier Simpson, great defender. You'd probably say Javon Carter is better defender than Xavier Simpson, correct? Or comparable. Say comparable.
Comparable.
Jalen Brunson had 27 points against West Virginia.
Yeah.
So
he's just
I agree. But what I'm saying is this is the argument that I would make if we were going to say that the Michigan was going to win. So you got Xavier Simpson that can at least say he can at least make it hard for Jalen Brunson. You think that's fair? Mm-hmm. Then they have the other athletes and the other defenders on the perimeter between Charles Matthews, Jordan Poole, Isaiah Livers, Duncan Robinson, Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman. It's a long name to say. Those guys are switchable. And what Villanova does, like we were talking about, is they have all those shooters and they make you defend in space. And that's something that Michigan's actually able to do because they have the bodies and the athletes to match up with them. They're not going to get smoked by Amari Spellman on the perimeter because Mo Wagner.
You can drive Duncan Robinson. You can drive.
I know you can. But it's not going to be like it was for Spellman against Udoka as a
bookie. All says watching Michigan.
Well, that's why I'm saying they're going to score like 70 points, 75. They're not going to score 90. But I just don't see Michigan scoring more than 60.
That's the problem. Right. I think that's the problem.
Michigan's offense is so dependent. Mo Wagner. They're not going to let him go for 20, and they're not going to let him rebound like that.
Nope.
You think he's going to get those putbacks? Hell no.
No. But he also missed some open shots.
Yeah.
And I think Michigan in general missed really, a lot of open shots.
The only thing they shot well against in the tournament was A&M.
It's been bad.
A&M had zero it's been bad. That day.
So let's say that Michigan has one of the nights where they shoot 10
there weren't
10
overtime. Just so you know right now, we're in overtime. So I don't know what you're paying us per minute on this, but right now.
Natty Light Tall Boys.
How many minutes in are we?
21 minutes.
21 minutes. Oh, or 31. Yeah. No, I'm looking at it right now. We're 31. You said 20.
I'm ending it right now. I just want to make sure
we got this on record here.
If Michigan.
You're paying for dinner.
You're not eating dinner with us.
All right. Well, you're paying for something.
If Michigan shoots 10 for 20 from three, and Villanova struggles. I just want to know what Michigan has to do in your mind to be able to win. I think
Villanova has to miss a lot of open threes.
They have to do what they did against Texas Tech, like a 4 for 25 night.
They need
Michigan
that.
Has to have like what
well,
they did against
help.
Texas A&M.
They need like four guys in double figures.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even need Wagner to go for 25.
We've seen like the worst Villanova can play. They played awful against West Virginia for a long stretch. They played awful against Texas Tech. They shot awful against Texas Tech. They won both of those games by 12.
Right. Villanova 2 years ago.
Would you say Michigan? Where would rank those three teams? West Virginia, Texas Tech, Michigan.
Michigan, Texas Tech, West Virginia. Probably. I mean, I think Michigan's probably better than them. But
maybe.
But yeah. I mean, right now, like Michigan's offense stinks.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, Villanova is not completely dependent on their offense anymore.
Yep. Right.
That's the biggest thing is that
they're not like live by the three die by the
no,
three. Like
no,
they can,
in
they
fact,
can go off the bounce.
Right
they got
now,
dudes.
They're believing they're a great defensive team.
Oh, they're locked in.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest
attitude
difference. Is
they
together, can win a, they could win a game in the minutes. 60s if they had to. Where you would have said earlier, there's no chance.
The spread is 6.5. Let's call it 12.5. Who you got? Villanova minus 12.5.
Villanova, because I said 13.
Just call it 12.5.
Yeah.
Did we just decide
spread,
to move the line?
6.5. Let's call 12.
I'm moving the line. I think Villanova 6.5 is the easiest bet in the history.
I'm going to say that would be a bad beat. What? I'm going to go the bad beat, and I think at the end, I think Michigan would like cover on like one of those layups with no time left. And
so you're predicting
the walk
a bad
on,
beat?
The walk-on is dribbling down the court, and he just wants a garbage bucket.
No, Villanova will guard that.
They will not guard that. They will not guard a walk-on.
So I was when I was doing my anonymous scouting reports, I was talking to one, and he was like, we're down by 14. There's like a minute left. Everyone's giving up. And I don't know where DiVincenzo comes skying in for a rebound, like boxing out. He's like, it sucks. It's like they play eight guys and they just have more energy than everybody in the world.
I think, can we do this for my podcast after the game tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Will you do it? Like, but
absolutely.
But writing, but you got a lot of writing responsibilities.
I'll have my file up at the buzzer.
And then we'll do
and
it.
And by the time that we're done with
after
everything.
We're done?
Yeah. By the time we're done with everything.
After my write through.
We're in.
I'm in.
Yeah, I'll do it.
Let's do it.
We'll do it.
Fellas.
Appreciate it.
Got it.